This is The Traverse Cityist. I'm Gretchen Carr, creator, producer, and host. I invite you to join me on an exploration of the regional culture in and around Traverse City, Michigan. If you are new to this podcast, welcome. If you are joining The Traverse Cityist for the first time, be sure to listen to our first episode featuring watershed biologist Rob Carner and our conversation about his connection to the land around him and how it has influenced his identity and values.
The Traverse Cityist is brought to you with the support of Oriana Community Co-op, celebrating 50 years in the community. Oriana is Traverse City's go-to source for local produce and specialty ingredients. Founded in 1973 as a back porch buying club, Oriana has grown into Michigan's largest food co-op with over 10,100 community owners. Learn more about our commitment to regional food resiliency at oriana.coop.
In honor of Women's History Month, The Traverse Cityist devotes this episode to the memory and legacy of Lois Golightly.
Lois was short of stature, but big in heart in so many ways. She was always concerned about global issues and local issues, women's issues in particular.
She was intimidating. She knew a ton about co-ops. She was not a large, physical large person, but she was a huge personality.
She was just amazing. And to tell you the truth, I had no idea she was as accomplished until I read her obituary. I just thought she was just another me, another person interested in things.
When I remember her, she was always very polite. When she would call me, and before I even knew her, I talked to her on the phone several times. And she was always very kind, and she always had suggestions, but she was not demanding. Right away, you felt like she was a longtime friend, even though I didn't know her at that time.
I first met Lois over the phone when I was employed at Interlochen Public Radio. She was a frequent caller, always following up with a question to a story that she heard on the air. For Lois, the radio was one of the few resources available for vital information during the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic and subsequent lockdown. It was during that time that I got to know her through our phone conversations. When Lois moved to Traverse City with her husband Warren Lang in the early 1980s, she brought with her a history of activism. Born in 1931, Lois grew up in the Detroit area. As an adolescent, she worked as a paperboy under an assumed name because girls were not allowed to deliver the newspaper. She tried hard to be traditional, married at 21 to a prince charming but with eyes closed for the kiss, and encouraged by a father who had told her at 18 that girls don't need to go to college. She had three children, one girl and two boys. After a divorce and a second marriage, she took classes in accounting and economics. Later on, she earned a degree in hydraulics and was the first woman hired at the General Motors Tech Center. A devout Quaker, Lois traveled to Washington, D.C. in 1968, where she and others were arrested as they held a peaceful demonstration in support of the Southern Christian Leadership Council under Dr. Ralph Abernathy. She canvassed door to door in the final key states needed to pass the Equal Rights Amendment. Lois was also a supporter and volunteer of the Koinonia Farm in Georgia, the birthplace of Habitat for Humanity International. In her retirement years, she enjoyed the outdoors, local theater, taking courses at Northwestern Michigan College, and finding ways to serve the Traverse City community. Catherine Carrier, reference librarian for the Traverse Area District Library, recalls Lois's dedication to community.
Rather than being the person on the city council or, in Lansing or whatever, she was better at being the citizen who was keeping them accountable to the everyday citizen and what was going on with them. If she had run for something else, you know, some office, then she wouldn't be that citizen anymore. And the politicians do tend to become the elite or celebrities and stuff. And I don't think she ever really sought celebrity status. She was okay being the person who pushed the celebrity, though, if you will.
Yeah.
I think she had a good impact that way.
In short, Lois epitomized what it meant to be a citizen. She utilized public resources to help her stay educated and informed. Kay Rausch worked as a secretary for Grand Traverse County and the Michigan State University Extension. Kay would take phone calls from the general public on topics related to food safety and home economics. Although she never met Lois in person, she will never forget her.
So I met her via a telephone call, just like you.
And do you remember what that first telephone call was about?
I do, exactly. I can tell you exactly what it was about. She called about eggs.
Eggs. What did she want to know about eggs?
Well, here's the thing. You know, after finding out about who she was, I understand now why. Because she is concerned about the community. I'm sorry I never got to meet her personally, but I feel I knew her. I actually knew her voice. I mean, she'd come on the line, oh, hi, Lois.
Jennifer Berkey, district director of the Michigan State University Extension, had great respect for Lois's curiosity.
I never met anyone that had more questions about eggs.
I know.
I mean, I didn't think there were that many questions about eggs to be answered.
The internet changed the way people conducted research, but Lois did not utilize the internet, nor did she use email. She preferred to contact her sources directly. Perhaps she valued the human connection that came with finding the answers to her questions.
And she was so grateful.
And grateful, yes.
I remember that about Lois being grateful. And I remember she was very skeptical about anything that you would research on the internet. I always would need to send her something because she didn't have like an email type of system that we could forward her links to the resources we found to her. So I'd have to print it out and send it to her. So I had a whole package of labels that I had printed out with her address on it, and I kept her phone number.
Her curiosity was just unending.
That curiosity sparked creativity, which led to collaboration and service. For Oriana Food Co-op, the largest food co-op in Michigan, Lois spent over 200 hours writing their bylaws by doing research in the county law library. Steve Nance, general manager for Oriana, admits that he was intimidated by Lois at first, but then realized that she was a valuable resource.
Lois, going back to the 80s, had worked with the Oriana board to rework our bylaws, which I don't even know if we had bylaws before 1981. And we still have pretty much the same bylaws that have been revamped since then. But she had the ability to distill things down, and she was a very plain speaking person. You knew exactly what she was thinking. So Lois especially gravitated to kind of more of a socialist mindset. She gravitated to kind of how we look at things at the co-op. Because of Oriana, how can the world be a better place? And I think that would be describing Lois to me, is that she thought, what can I do? What can I bring? What can I share that'll make the world a better place?
Lois's impact continues to live on at Oriana.
In true co-op fashion, through the years, we've had ups and downs, and we've lost a lot of co-ops in the last few decades, especially with competition that took our co-op playbook in natural and organics. Everybody's into it now, but stores like, well, Lucky's, but that really basically tried to take what co-ops had been doing for, we're doing it now 50 years. But without people, smart people like Lois, I would say I'm not sure that Oriana would have survived the challenges coming out of the so we were pretty successful on Randolph, but moved to 10th and then took on a mortgage. We had to grow. And Lois was very, again, you talked to Lois, but she was very instrumental in making sure that we were a smarter, stronger, cooperative model business. So.
Lois was also full of ideas and not afraid to share them with the people who could help her get them off the ground. In the spring of 2020, she contacted her old friend, Chet Janik, who at the time served as the Leelanau County Administrator. During the high point of the Black Lives Matter protest, Lois decided to get involved after she heard disparaging remarks made by the then Leelanau County Sheriff.
Just short before she passed away, with the Black Lives Matter and police unrest, she had some concerns about some of the comments made by our current sheriff. So she went out and actually purchased books on her own that had different viewpoints and asked if I could pick them up, if I could distribute them to the commissioners and to the sheriff to have kind of a different viewpoint than what the sheriff was saying about law enforcement and their training in the background. So once again, very active right to the very end.
Chet had a special history with Lois. He recalls the first time he met her.
Well, I had the honor of meeting Lois first in 1982. And I remember that because that's the year I was appointed as director of student activities at Northwestern Michigan College.
As the student activities director at Northwestern Michigan College, Chet worked with Lois's daughter, a then student, and the president of the Student Government Association. The association used student dollars to sponsor a speaker series. Lois attended many of the speaker events and utilized her connection to Chet. In Ms. Magazine, Lois read about Judy Chicago and went to see her famous work, The Dinner Party. The experience was overwhelming for her, a combination of beauty, dedication, feeling, discipline, study, and mostly the affirmation for women. After seeing The Dinner Party, she committed herself to bring Chicago's work to Traverse City.
Lois approached me with some different ideas and this wild idea about bringing in the Judy Chicago Project to Traverse City. And so that's how I got to meet Lois politely.
Judy Chicago, the pioneering American feminist artist, had also created the Birth Project, a collaborative collection consisting of needleworked paintings exploring the theme of birth and creation. In the winter of 1986, Lois was instrumental in bringing the Birth Project to Traverse City.
Truly, I had no idea who Judy Chicago was until she told me about it. Once I did the research on it, I still didn't think it was going to happen because, and so, but she was persistent and kept kind of pushing me in a kind way to keep calling, keep sending them notes. This was before email, and then we didn't have a place to have it. But that didn't stop Lois. We kept, you know, one step at a time and kept removing barriers, and we got in Traverse City. It was a big success.
The biggest barrier was finding a place to host the exhibit, for this was before Traverse City had an art museum.
We reserved this entire building because at that time there was no museum. It was the Olson Center, and we had to change all the classes around that building because at that time they were teaching the culinary arts classes there. Reserved it for 3 weeks. It was controversial to get it in there. And then a snowstorm come. I'm thinking, no one's going to come. And this is not, and just the opposite happened. And truly, we had busloads of people come from around the states that came.
In the dead of a northern Michigan winter, over 3,500 people came to see the Birth Project. The exhibit was described as a real coup. There was heated controversy and spirited discussion within the local arts community on if the images of birth were actually art. One of the discussions resulted in a bar brawl at Dill's Old Town Saloon. The Record Eagle published a story with images from the Birth Project, sparking both outrage and praise from readers. Some called the images of birth pornographic and offensive, others hailed Lois for her vision and dedication. Lois's success in bringing the Birth Project to Traverse City raised the collective consciousness of the community, for it was at this time that the College Board of Trustees and area philanthropists were thinking about building and endowing a museum. The Birth Project exhibit demonstrated the example of what could be available to the community if there was a museum. In the few years following the Birth Project exhibit, donations began to pour into the Denos Museum endowment. 5 years later, the Denos opened to the public in 1991. In that same year, four pieces from the Birth Project were gifted by Judy Chicago's foundation to the Denos' permanent collection. In November of 2021, after many phone conversations over a span of 3 years, I finally met Lois in person. She shared with me that if she could write a book about her life, she would give it the title, From Common to Community. She stated, "I was a common person. I didn't have any particular background that made it seem for me to be involved in the arts. It was just my ability to connect with people. There was some part of me that didn't allow me to be intimidated." A few weeks after meeting Lois, she passed away. She was 90 years old. Here is a recording I made of Lois reading a reflective summary that she wrote for the closing night of the Birth Project. I'm Gretchen Carr. Thank you for listening to The Traverse Cityist.
A closing, but not a closure. I am hard-pressed to find the words to describe my feelings about having the Birth Project within reach, metaphorically speaking. I was awed not just by the work and all the meaning behind and within it, but by the gut reactions of the viewers. I understood the responses of those record ego readers who wrote negative letters because I had had to work through my own feelings about the graphic design, even as I was promoting the exhibit. I was also sure and had confirmation in at least one case that the letter writers had not seen the exhibit before commenting on the published black and white drawings. I came to realize that the main reason for the sense of shock felt from the drawings is that other than in medical books, the only time women's bodies are revealed are in girly magazines. Especially for older women like myself, there's always been the dual message from society, men, to either flaunt it or hide it as shameful. Complying with either message means paying a price. While there is a place and time for healthy modesty, I realize that most women end up, one, with others, doctors, nurses, husbands, lovers, looking at their private parts than women do themselves. No wonder getting used to having a positive, powerful presentation took some thought and time to get used to it. The Birth Project put me in touch with that center of creation that I had trusted when I had my first child, as naturally as the times allowed, before natural childbirth was seen as normal. Unfortunately, I allowed myself to be intimidated by medical technology and the gods of medicine, so that the second and third births were not as positive an experience as the first birthing. The touching responses of many women, some of them men, personally expressed to me left me almost speechless at times, not easily done. I didn't know how to respond to the deep expressions of gratitude given to me, although I had been sure that there were people out there, women especially, who would appreciate and come to the Birth Project. I was not prepared for the depth of feeling unleashed from within the majority of the viewers. There were two main frustrations for me, other than the lack of sleep working on the show. One, the difficulty of learning on the job, is I found that my offer to be a gopher and volunteer had grown to be in charge. And two, hearing only bits and pieces of stories, phrases from women who wanted to talk with me or interview me from day to day, and the hours and days began to flow in long a time and continually as this paragraph. I did in the last week feel that I was finally seeing the exhibit and did some docent duty, which I enjoyed very much and received compliments on. I was surprised to find that the intent looks, while I lectured, were not critical but attentive ones. So I did get the break away from the phone and figures sales. One of the comments made by a viewer was whether there would be a long-range effect from the exhibit. From the many comments and discussions still going on, it is clear to me that the answer is yes. Lois Golightly, surrogate mother, not the end, but the beginning.
The Traverse Cityist is brought to you with the support of Oriana Community Co-op. Rooted in Traverse City for 50 years, now with two locations. Our 10th Street store, located in the heart of the Nobo neighborhood, and our newest location, Oriana West, on US 31, featuring a full-service meat and seafood counter, an inspired culinary department, and a robust cooking class program held in our teaching kitchen. Check out our upcoming events and cooking classes at oriana.coop.